Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Down the Rabbit Hole. I'm your host, Anais Sim, and today we're lucky enough to be joined by Sherry Hu. Sherry is the founder of Watering Music, which is a research publication focused on the intersection of music and tech that has recently undergone the process of becoming a DAO, which is super exciting. Sherry has also been heralded as one of the most critical thinkers working in the Web3 music space, so I'm super excited to talk to her today about the ways that Web3 is altering the music industry, what we have to look forward to, and how we can make sure that we're thoughtfully building towards that future. So thank you so much for coming on today, Sherry.
Yeah, of course. Honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay. So setting some context here, like I said, we have a diverse array of listeners, you know, some who I'm sure are intimately involved in the music industry, others who may not be. Just to level set, what is the state of the music industry today, and what are some of the problems that we're currently facing?
Big question.
Big question.
I could give like kind of high level overview. So I guess importantly, the music industry and what that entails is like a whole like range of kind of sub sectors. So there's like recorded music and publishing, and that's all around like music IP and music copyright. There's like the live music sector, e-commerce, and direct to fan. Like that's a very important part of the music industry, especially from like the artist career perspective. I think so much of, I guess, how I view the state of the music industry is definitely, I mean, as with so much of the world, is impacted by the pandemic over the last 2 years. And thinking about like artists' livelihoods and their ability to like make the music that powers the entire industry, I think the biggest impact of the pandemic was that it essentially decimated the touring or live sector, at least like early on. And it led to a lot of the most like critical discussions that I've seen in my career, like writing about and covering music and tech, about just how unsustainable the digital music economy is for most artists. So if you take out touring, which was a lifeline for so many artists, for a lot of artists, what you're left with is maybe some merch sales, but also just like streaming, which has like a very specific kind of payment model incentive structure that rewards scale. So unless you're like in the top 1% of like celebrities or signed to major label, it's really, really hard, near impossible to make a living off of streaming. So I think that conversation is still ongoing because like live shows are slowly coming back, but I'm seeing artists like begging their fans to show up to their concerts, like wearing masks, because if someone on their team gets COVID, then they have to cancel their shows. And that's just, it's still not financially sustainable. So still like very much like on the edge financially for a lot of artists. And so, yeah, I think how I would characterize a lot of discussions I'm seeing in music right now, especially, you know, this is a podcast that's very Web3, very DAO focused, is how can we like innovate around and transform the digital music economy and like move beyond just streaming and that specific model of consuming and discovering music? How can we strengthen the artist fan relationship online in a very similar way that live shows do offline? Like what's the digital equivalent? Lots of cool experiments around that. So yeah, I would say that's like TLDR of state of the music industry, in my view.
Yeah, you bring up some really amazing points. And I'm curious from your perspective. So Sherry has been working in this space since 2015, really at the intersection of music and tech. So you've been at the forefront of a lot of what's going on. And, you know, we're hearing a lot about the Web3 music lately, but this isn't the first rush that has happened. The first one was in 2015. So I'm curious, you know, how is this period of transformation playing out differently? And from what you're saying, it's being heavily impacted by the COVID-19 pandemics and the downstream negative consequences of that.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like a lot of this is unique to, yeah, like the music industry and the issues that the music industry compared to other industries have faced. So I guess to like step back and talk about the value of blockchain in general and the value of Web3, I feel like a lot of what it boils down to is having some single source of truth, like a single source of truth about like how much money is flowing through a system, who is engaging with that, and to what extent they're engaging with that. In music, what continues to blow my mind is that, and a lot of people's minds in the industry, is that there's no single source of truth about who owns what song and like who owns what percentage of what song. It's like still really, really hard to like find that information. Like people within record labels or like publishing companies, so much of their day, I guess, depending on what team you're on, but still like it exchanging emails back and forth, trying to figure out like what is the exact percentage split that this person got on this song, and like still very inefficient from a metadata standpoint. So when I first started covering music and tech in 2015, there was a huge wave of blockchain Web3 native startups that were trying to solve that specific problem. So how do we reconcile all of these disparate sources of data about like credits on songs, rights ownership, into one globally accessible decentralized database and just make that process a lot more efficient, not just for artists, but for the whole music industry? The problem with that is very much not technical and all political, at least from what I saw. Like if you're going to ask like a large corporation who like arguably a lot of their strategy is in like NDAs and then like not sharing data to like share this like very sensitive information with all of their competitors, that's going to be just like, it's like moving, what's the phrase, like kind of turning around a cruise ship. Very, very, very slow. So kind of what I noticed around that time and what colored a lot of people's view of blockchain in the music industry was influenced by those like political battles, like trying to get, like for that kind of model to work, you really need full consensus from all of these incumbent players, which is just like, especially if you're a startup that's like running on very limited resources, like total uphill battle to do that. What is so different about the current wave is that the most active people arguably do not care about like getting the incumbents on board at all. It's very much like driven by individual artists going ahead, releasing things like NFTs, releasing tokens, you know, multiple different kinds of tokens, and trying to create. It's not about like, how do we bring the old system onto the blockchain? It's about how do we create entirely new kinds of markets around our work? How do we foster entirely new kinds of relationships with fans through what the blockchain enables? So it's very much like bottom up, like experimenting, very much artist led, and then seeing what like new structures come from there, as opposed to how do we get like Universal Music Group or Warner Music Group to like give us all their data. So it's of course now like major labels and publishers are like seeing all the activity and they want to get more involved, but it's very much led, the conversation and the trends are very much led by like largely independent artists from the ground up, as opposed to taking a more top-down approach.
What do you think has led to that psychological shift? Was it pure frustration with, you know, the slowness that it was taking to try to get incumbents on board? Was it the rise of more independent artists? If you had to hypothesize here.
Yeah, a lot of different factors. And I do think the pandemic had a lot to do with it. So yeah, one is previously I would like, from the journalist point of view, get press releases about blockchain startups like all the time. There's a period of 2018, 2019 where there was just like no such announcement at all. And it was almost like a dirty word at like music industry conferences I would go to, where if like anyone mentioned it, people would roll their eyes and be like, oh, we know this isn't working. Or like, there's still all these problems to figure out. Yeah, like the 2020 pandemic happened. Artists were looking for alternative sources of income and revenue and just general incentive structures around their music. I guess aside from streaming economics, there's been a lot of discussion around, and this is like a wider marketing issue of like the notion of having to like pay to reach your audience on these very Web2 social platforms like Facebook and Twitter. And that just being very backwards, especially for like an independent artist trying to build a community and not necessarily trying to just like do this very traditional like advertising model to communicate with their fan base. So from like a social community building perspective, artists were also looking for alternatives. And so I distinctly remember, so two artists who have been super active in crypto from the very beginning of like the first wave of hype, like around 2015, are Blau and RAC. And they also like unsurprisingly were very early to this, like I guess second wave of hype around music and Web3, which I kind of put around fall 2020. Distinctly remember that like RAC released this like audiovisual piece and it sold on SuperRare for like $10,000 equivalent. I forgot the exact ETH amount, but like I saw that and like something clicked in my head, like something is up. Like these artists are actually making like real money in a way that completely flips the economics of streaming. Whereas like on Spotify, you're getting paid an average of $0.002, $0.003 per stream. Yeah, and like that just, you need like a ton of scale to be able to sustain yourself under that model. Whereas with something like what was happening with these auctions, these early auctions, you only had to find like one person who could sustain you with the equivalent of however many streams just like instantly. And actually, I do think RAC tweeted recently that he only recently finally recouped on like his label deals for his last two albums from like 2016, 2017, but it took like 5 years to get to that point. In that interim, he's been able to experiment so much with all these different like NFT and just general Web3 platforms, everything he's doing. So there's a psychological shift of like, just what other choices do I have? Like artists asking, like, what other choices do I have for like models I can tap into that like have different kinds of incentives, like that don't necessarily have to reward scale at all costs, or like that, yeah, require scale at all costs to work. But then it's not just psychological, it is also very much like has like significant tangible financial effects too. Like, how can I get paid more quickly, not have to wait like a month, you know, to get paid for consumption that happened a month ago or 6 months ago. So yeah, a lot of different factors that play there.
Yeah. I mean, we're really kind of introducing a different type of not only monetization model, but also community building model for artists, especially independent artists to be able to capitalize on. Okay, we're teasing it a bit here. But for listeners, you know, I feel like there's been a lot of hype around music NFTs in general, and some people may know what they are. Others may still be confused. We have the expert with us. So at a basic level, you know, how would you describe what music NFTs are and why they're important and what they uniquely enable?
Yes, something that I've realized actually is that my definition of a music NFT, I think, is maybe more generous than how some other like analysts or researchers might define it. And for people listening who might not know the context, so at Water Music, we have a database of music NFT sales that we update every single week. It's a mix of more like automated tracking of music NFT platforms and a lot of like manual curation on these more general marketplaces like OpenSea or more previously NFT Gateway. And we, yeah, have a very wide scope in that database in terms of like what defines a music NFT. So some people might define it only as an NFT that contains like a song attached to it or like links to a song in like the underlying metadata of the NFT. But we take a much broader view. I guess the goal of this database that we have is to track how much value NFTs are bringing to like the music industry as a whole. So like music festival NFTs fall under that, even if they don't have any audio attached to them. Like NFTs as tickets to these live events. Tons of celebrities are releasing NFTs in almost as like an influencer marketing kind of deal with like fashion brands or like other kinds of brands outside of music. No audio, but the value of the NFT is tied to some commercially active artist or to the value of music. There are also a lot of like music-themed PFP projects that don't have audio. I think Speakerheads is one example where it's like, it was run by this company that does a lot of like concert posters. So it's like very visually driven, no audio, but still the, like the reason you buy into that and like kind of the long-term vision for that project is about celebrating music culture. So I think all of that encompasses what a music NFT is. I think it's like the value is driven by the value of music in some like abstract way or in a very concrete way, like there's value going to a musician or like to some commercially active recording artist. It's like the kind of boundaries I put. Yeah.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So in prepping for this interview, I was actually talking to a musician friend of mine who's not into crypto, but is interested in getting more involved in the space. You know, he's been at music for like 2.5 years now and is kind of struggling to be able to make it. And to him, you know, the traditional art NFTs we see, like BC, Crypto Coven, et cetera, they make sense because he understands that the traditional art industry is built off of scarcity, where people are willing to travel thousands of miles to see, you know, the Mona Lisa in Paris. But what he's having a harder time understanding is he views the music industry as built off of abundance, right? Where people are remixing each other's beats, where there's access to a lot of free content, etc. So he's having a hard time understanding how this concept of scarcity manifests in the music industry and how that differs from traditional art NFTs, for example, and if that's going to completely change like the ethos of music industry in general. So that's loaded, but want to get your take.
No, it's such a good observation, and so important because I think the whole point of why artists are interested in experimenting more with Web3 is they can create new financial incentive structures around their work, and that they can give themselves more choice and have more control. So what like woke up my mom to the concept of NFTs and like got her paying attention was this Christie's auction with Beeple, like this big one that was, you know, sold for $69 million. People see that like price tag and it's like, wait, what's going on here? I think that drove in the music industry as well, like a lot more attention and hype and investment in NFTs, but in this like very specific, almost like traditional art centric or like leaning model that was like the only thing that they were really seeing. And so I think that has created some kind of perception in music and Web3 that like that is the only model. Like the only model is to like go for like maximum scarcity, only one of ones, only reaching the wealthiest buyers, which like, yeah, in terms of making like the best use of the technology, I don't think is true at all. So I guess that's like one just interesting thing that I've observed. So for music NFTs, what's interesting about like music NFTs that contain audio is that usually the audio itself is not gated. You know, anyone can listen to them. Thinking with some music specific platforms like Catalog and Sound, for example, like anyone can listen to any of the songs that are listed there. What is scarce is the relationship that the token creates between the artist and the fan or the collector, or just like the buyer of the NFT. And in that sense, I would say that form of scarcity exists a lot in the music industry, just not in like the IP world, but like the live music industry runs entirely on a sense of scarcity. Like an artist is only showing up in the city for one or a couple of shows. Only, you know, a small handful of people will be able to make it. Only a small handful of people will have the ticket that proves that they were there. A lot of artists will like sell merch that you can only buy at the show. So it's completely like scarcity driven. From that standpoint, in terms of the scarcity of like the experience or the relationship between the artist and the fan, that's what I really feel like is being monetized, or like that's what the source of value is for music NFTs, even more than like the song. Because yeah, like it's, I think at this point, the songs themselves are like freely available. People will find a way to make them freely available. But having that like ownership of that token tied to your wallet that shows that you supported this artist, or in many cases, like gives you access to future benefits from that artist directly, that is like the source of scarcity that a lot of fans like actually do, especially like diehard fans, would love to like experience from artists. So yeah, I guess so that distinction between like value of the IP versus value of the relationship, I think is important in this case.
I'm really glad you brought that up because I definitely want to get into that. But for listeners who may be confused about the token dynamics of it, how are you actually able to acquire a token from an artist, for example? How does that tangibly play out?
I guess it depends if we're talking about like NFTs or social tokens. But usually what happens is an artist will mint and list an NFT on either some third-party marketplace like OpenSea, or they'll get approved by a much like by more closed curated ecosystem like Catalog to start releasing NFTs. And then in terms of like what the fan can do and how you can acquire it, also a huge like wide range of philosophies around this. Actually, yeah, like in music, because I feel like a lot of fans still have like really negative perceptions around NFTs, the approach to like how you can get one is like super wide ranging. So actually a lot of music NFT platforms that run on Ethereum and like the ones that are getting the most steam, I realize like make the tech the most like visible, and like you have to engage with it directly. Like you have to have a crypto wallet, have to connect it, have to like engage directly with the blockchain to like be able to get this NFT. Whereas there's a company called Medallion that worked with the Icelandic music group Sigur Rós to launch an NFT powered music community. It's like a fan community, really, really smooth interface that almost doesn't mention the word NFT at all. They are focused like much more on the value that is being delivered to fans and not the fact that it's taking the form of an NFT. I think entry point into the community just requires minting. Like you don't even need a wallet. If you don't have one, you can still like claim this NFT that I believe is minted on Polygon. So it's totally free. And yeah, and so like that philosophy is like focusing more on like the core fan experience and not on like, look at this new tech we're experimenting with. Because I think in that world, with those kinds of genres, especially, that can lead to a lot of backlash. So yeah, I guess, like, to sum that up, completely depends. Having a wallet, crypto wallet, certainly helps, but I'm seeing a lot of momentum in the music industry also around, like, experiences where you don't necessarily need one, I guess, or like the platform will set up a custodial wallet for you. And then if you end up wanting to transfer the NFT to your own wallet, like, they will let you do that ideally. But yeah, so there's a very wide spectrum across genres, across, like, people's familiarity with the technology as well.
Mm-hmm. And to being able to actually acquire those tokens from the artist, whether that's in the form of, you know, you're participating towards a crowdfund for their new album, or you purchase one of their music NFTs and you acquire tokens through that, like we've been talking about. I think you bring up a really interesting point about the NFTs that are attached to the audio content of the music in particular, right? Like, that audio is not gated. You had a good line. It's what's scarce is the relationship between the token and the fan. And what I hear a lot when I'm talking to my musician friends is this idea that if they're going Web3, like, they have to go full Web3, right? It's a complete shift of their marketing strategy. Whereas, I'm curious what you think about it. You can use Web3 music as, like, you know, to supplement what you're currently doing across different streaming platforms, et cetera. It's just like a different way that you're trying to appeal to your audience. Do you hear that, like, maximalism take a lot from musicians that you interact with, or how do you perceive it?
Yeah, I hear it a lot. And with Water and Music, in terms of our community, we definitely sit, it's not like siloed off. And I think what's, in my view, so great about the community is that there is a lot of, like, cross-pollination, but there are, like, very, like, Web3 native people coming in, like, trying to learn about how the music industry works. And then there are, like, very traditional music industry people who have worked in music for, like, 15, 20 years, just trying to figure out what's going on with Web3. And yeah, so I think early on, I did see a lot of more maximalist views. I guess not so much about artists moving completely to Web3, but more like on the structural level, like, Web3 will destroy record labels, Web3 will disrupt, insert middleman here, like, labels, agencies, publishers, and, like, that was very much the, like, driving factor for people to get involved, which, like, I completely understand that ethos, especially because it seems like every month there's, like, a new horror story about a bad, like, label deal, like, those certainly still do exist. But I think what a lot of artists have realized, and what I've realized too, is I don't think there's any good, like, Web3 native marketing or communication tool yet. We've run into this at Water and Music. We're, like, airdropping tokens to our supporters, if we're, like, selling NFTs. Like, we still need to use very Web2 communication rails. Like, by far our most important communication channel to, like, stream holders and to our members is email. Like, that is still the most effective, like, direct way to reach people, largely because you can't, like, get directly message wallet addresses, probably for a variety of privacy related reasons. But I guess, yep. So to go back to, like, I guess, general statement, if you look at how all these, like, Web3 projects are marketing themselves, like, Twitter, one of the most, like, Web2 platforms out there, is still the main, like, gathering space, at least publicly, for a lot of these communities. Discord, also very Web2, basically has a monopoly over, like, Web3 communities and, like, how they stay in touch, which I think a lot of people are, like, concerned about. But so I think, yeah, the notion of, like, going all into Web3 is already, like, a misnomer, because you are going to have to rely for now on, like, these Web2 channels to communicate, to build community, and to help people connect and keep in touch with each other in ways that, like, don't necessarily involve tokens at all. So yeah, and then in, like, relation to that, I'm noticing, well, I think there are definitely, like, multiple camps, but there are, like, some artists who, I actually think the visual art world is a great example. There are some visual artists who are like, not interested in engaging with, like, the Christie's and Sotheby's of the world and just want to, like, create entirely new ecosystems and communities. But there's, like, I think a really good chunk of artists who still want to, like, associate themselves with those bigger brands, and they see that as, like, a source of, like, cultural cachet, which, like, if you're trying to get to a certain level of scale, maybe unfortunate reality is that, like, those bigger brands do still have, like, access to those bigger distribution channels. Like, I may be misremembering, but I feel like all of the, like, bigger PFP projects, like Bored Ape, or CryptoPunks, a lot of their creators are signed to very traditional talent agencies now, like CAA and WME, which are like, who are brokering, maybe they're pushing the needle on like what brand partnerships in crypto can look like, but it's like a very traditional kind of like team setup with like one of the oldest kind of structures in the entertainment industry. So yeah, so I think it, for those people who do want to achieve a certain level of scale, especially, I'm noticing that like they're not really seeing it as like disruptive. They're almost seeing like incumbents as like a partner in an interesting way. But then of course there are like still a lot of people and like for marketing much more than like financial reasons. Whereas of course there's still going to be, as in any like cultural scene, like very strong contingent of like more underground, like independent artists in their communities who are like not interested in engaging with that. So that's kind of another like rift that I see.
I think you bring up an interesting point in terms of scale. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, is like how fame and success for creators is perceived differently in a Web 2 versus a Web 3 context. And I think it touches to a prior point that you made about the relationship between the artist and the fan and kind of the blurring of the line between the two. So, you know, to get into this, I want to talk about how Web3 alters that relationship and how DAOs and community ownership play into this new phase of the music industry and how that relates back to, you know, how we may be perceiving scale differently in this context.
For sure. Something that I've also learned is that very few people agree on what a DAO even is. Like I'm noticing like tons of projects will come up. I guess Twitter is like the main social channel I follow, and they'll have DAO at the end of their name, but they just have a Discord server. They don't have a token.
What's your take from yes. being on that side of it? I want to hear it.
Yes. So, and I this may have been discussed on in like this podcast already, but there's a whole coalition of DAOs called DAOstar that is working on trying to create a shared definition of like metadata standard for DAOs. So I've seen that as kind of my resource and just like reference point. And even that process, like in that coalition, has taken like 5 to 6 months, I think, to put together. So it's definitely like a slow process, but I really like how they've broken it down initially. So I guess there are three layers under the definition. One is cryptographically verifiable membership. So usually that is a form of like a wallet address that holds some kind of token, can be a social token or an NFT. So it's like cryptographic identity and membership. I think they call it behaviors. So like, and usually that's like kind of smart contract, like actions that, you know, I guess involve some kind of like treasury with shared capital, like, you know, among that membership. And then the third and final layer is the like proposal layer, I think is what they call it. So it's like members can like collectively vote on decisions that will trigger these like behaviors or actions. So like, I guess to sum that up in an example, members who like collectively govern this like shared source of capital, usually in pursuit of some shared mission or like culture or like shared interests. So I think that in terms of the, especially like culture focused DAOs that I've seen, so like biggest ones being like, yeah, like Friends of Benefits, Pleaser DAO as like some of the biggest examples, I think they all like fit that definition. And so in terms of how that changes dynamics in the music industry, there are or a lot of different kinds of like music specific DAOs. The ones that are the most Web3 native are also, I think, the most like creatively interesting, but also niche and artist facing. So there are a lot of like really cool or generative music projects specifically, where it's kind of similar to like visual PFPs, where you have like multiple different options for stems behind a given song. So like 5-10 different options for like the vocals or the like the bass line or like certain kinds of instrumentals. And then yeah, when you mint an NFT, it'll give you kind of a random token that you can that you know have in your wallet. But then there are certain projects like I'll shout out like Julian Mudd as an example, where I think he's building out a model where like as a artist or producer, if you like contribute projects to this like wider generative music system, that like is a way to contribute to the DAO and like kind of collectively govern through either, yeah, owning these tokens or like contributing creatively, kind of like where it goes. So there's that very like Web3 native model. I'm noticing a lot of like more traditional like labels or music companies coming in that are launching tokens for the sake of involving their fans as like participants on the operation side. So one example is Leaving Records. They're a longstanding, more experimental electronic label based in LA, and they have a token called Genre. And I think they're also, as with so many of these DAOs, are still like fleshing out long-term token design, but I think an important part of their vision is they already have a very like a vibrant and participatory fan community. So like as a fan, there can be a feature where you can like help put on local showcases for artists or help like curate compilations or like put on other virtual events and earn this token, which then gives you, it's not just kind of on-chain proof of work, but it does give you financial upside, at least in like the growth of the brand of the label through the value of the token. So yeah, I think all of the use cases of DAOs and social tokens, and at least the ones that I've seen and studied, go back to this idea of like not just co-creation, but then co-participation in the value that those works generate, and then like leaning into the like participatory nature of fan cultures that already exist and have existed in a lot of genres.
That's super interesting. I had Lee Jin on the pod a couple months back, and she describes it as like this new area of the creator economy known as the ownership economy, where exactly what you're saying, fans are financially aligned to the upside of that community. And she had an interesting point. She said that I don't want to misquote her, obviously, so I'm paraphrasing, but the genesis of what she was saying was that one of the marketing problems that she sees specifically like in this creator economy side of things is that we're focused so much on the benefit to the creator, which is obviously hugely important going back to all of the problems that we talk about with the music industry today, but we're not focusing as much on the benefit to the fan as well and this co-ownership model that we're creating through this. So I love to hear what you're saying about, you know, it really is a collaborative process. At the same time, though, I think about artist friends of mine who, you know, are more introverted, may not be as willing and ready to be vulnerable with their creative process. And I wonder, like, if a model like this ever would work for them and whether we're building towards a certain type of creator with these communities that we're cultivating today. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so much to unpack there as with all this. Yeah, so going back to the idea or the concept I just mentioned of like co-creation, and I think another way of thinking about that is like the notion of the fan themselves as a producer or a creator working with the artist. For sure, I know a lot of artists who like would despise that idea. And they're like, the music that I make is like sacred and I don't want anyone influencing it. I don't want like financial incentives going into that process. I just want to like go in the studio, make my music, release it, not have to think, you know, more about marketing than I already am, which is already stressing me out on like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So that is a very real issue. And for sure, the artists who I'm seeing do really well with Web3 are like willing to put themselves out there on Twitter spaces all the time. Or I actually see a lot of overlap with like the kinds of artists who would be like very active on Twitch or like very active in Discord or on Patreon, just like that ethos of being like super horizontal and transparent and accessible to your community. It makes a lot of sense in the context of certain like underground or independent music communities where that would happen anyway, and where like the role boundaries are blurred anyway. Like fans are more than willing to help out. And in contrast, I've seen so many like bigger artists release NFTs and get just like so much fan backlash that they like cancel the NFT drop or even like have to take a break from social media for a while just because it's like so overwhelming. So that definitely is a concern of like how much is the like current state of how these projects are implemented, like Web3 projects, just like exacerbating this pressure that's already there. Yeah, around like fan accessibility. This gets into the idea of like parasocial relationships, or the idea that like a fan, because they follow an artist on social media, sees the artist as like their friend. Lots of like psychological layers there. That said, what I would like to see, and what I do agree with, is like using Web3 as a as a toolkit in like just the wider suite of apps or tools that you are already using. I will go back to REC because I think he's been in the space like long enough that he's done a lot of very cool experiments. I don't feel like he's putting creative control in the hands of his community at all. And like he has a social token and he has like he's like released a ton of NFTs, but those don't grant they grant like community access more than like creative control. And I think as long as artists draw like very clear and hard boundaries in the beginning around like what is and is not in token holders' control, I think it's manageable. And I think in like REC's case, his token is mostly just it's rewarded to longtime supporters of his across platforms. So like Bandcamp, Patreon, Twitch. And so it's like thanking longtime community members and not just, which I think keeps the focus more on like building community on the culture and not just on the financial value of the token. And so, and this is in terms of like a very tangible resource that like I would like to see out there that I don't think is there. And I think is what is maybe driving fear in a lot of artists is how to even start thinking about like fan governance. Like, I don't think the concept of like fans being involved in the governance of an artist's career is something that a lot of artists have like thought about or even like know where to start to think about, like what resources or like previous case studies they can reference. So, and yeah, so that seems like a general community design problem and not like a technical problem. But yeah, I would like to see more like public discussion about that as well.
I think you also bring up a good point with RAC where, you know, it's not about the fans being actively involved in the creation process, but rather the access to the community and like really being able to associate and interact with a values aligned and mission driven community that is under the umbrella of RAC. I think that's super interesting. Okay, I need to touch on this point because I think that artists who are thinking about getting into Web3 will be most scared about this is how their fans are going to react, like you've talked about. So if you've already built up like a decently sized Web2 fan base, but at the end of the day, you're not able to make a living off of that because of the structures that are in place, it can be really frightening to move into Web3 exactly because of what you're saying, because people have such strong opinions about crypto. And I know that you guys recently wrote a report about this in Water and Music. So how do you think about onboarding more, you know, Web2 fan bases into Web3? Should we even be building towards that audience, or is this a new type of consumer?
I can share how we're approaching it at Water and Music, which I think does reflect how a lot of like artists are balancing those two. We have like a paid Web2 membership, monthly or annual, paid through fiat, that still drives most of our revenue. And that's how most people still like support us. But we also have like membership NFTs that we're now selling alongside our reports. And we have this token that's given to contributors. And certainly something that we're like completely accepting and building around is the assumption that like there is going to be a significant chunk of people who find Water Music valuable who are not going to set up a crypto wallet because they're just like not interested, still skeptical. I think the last thing we would want to communicate is that like those people are no longer included in our community. I think that's like not true at all. The focus for Water Music is always like a focus on like the mission and like what we're trying to achieve with the community. In our case, like fostering more fluid information and knowledge exchange and like just like cool connections and cool projects in the music industry that otherwise would not exist. So we're like in all our communication, even around like stream, like our token airdrops, it's like always on what cool work and what cool output does this enable us to do, and not on like the financial value of the token or the fact that this is an NFT that we've like put out. And then so to bring that to like artists, and then one example of an artist who's very active in Web3 who thinks similarly is Verite, and she's done like really big drops recently with platforms like Royal in terms of, you know, like releasing NFTs that give like revenue shares in her songs. But I think she still like she's not like forcing her like Web2 fans who just like her music and want, and that's like the way that they like prefer to engage, to like set up a crypto wallet and like engage in Web3. If they're interested, of course, like she and her team are like making themselves like very available to in a very hands-on way. And like all the artists who are doing really good things with onboarding are doing it in a very hands-on, intimate, like not scaled way of like weekly Twitter spaces, private Zoom calls, Discord calls. Ahead of our airdrop at Water Music, we did like a couple weeks worth of crypto wallet setup tutorials just so that like, yeah, we could just walk through that in real time with people who needed it, who were interested. I think, yeah, so I guess there are like multiple stages there. There's one stage of like, are these fans like interested in and comfortable with crypto? If they're not, it's very important to meet them where they're at and not like impose like some model that they might not be interested in or ready for. And then for the people who are, then there's a question of like, yeah, what infrastructure can you set up? And it is a lot of like non-technical, like human to human, like interaction, like walking people through how to set up a wallet, being available or having someone on like your team available to answer questions about crypto in general. So like with like crypto setup tutorials at Water Music, like the focus would be on how to set up a wallet, but then people would have questions about like security and like privacy and just general questions about crypto and like being ready to like have discussions about that, I think is going to be important. And that's definitely a process that cannot be rushed. It's also a huge takeaway from like our side. Like it will take like as long as there is a token and you're going to have like Web2 fans who might be interested in getting more involved in Web3, like it's not just like a one and done thing. Like that support is going to be like very important to keep on like an ongoing basis.
I think you bring up a lot of good points there. And like we've kind of been talking about throughout this conversation, it doesn't have to be a fully maximalist approach, right? I like how you're framing it as you can use, you know, these Web3 tools that are at your disposal as an artist as just another, you know, arsenal within your package. Well, maybe that phrasing is incorrect, but you know what I mean. What I think about a lot lately is how a lot of crypto right now is built for a very specific subset of interests, you know, mostly tech and finance bros. But what I'm really excited about is things like how crypto is interacting with the music industry and crypto culture in general, and how as we expand the use cases, different types of people will funnel into these communities. But it is, you know, takes a certain amount of responsibility on behalf of the artist, like we've been talking about, to actively handhold their members into this ecosystem. So love to see that, you know, you guys are doing that at Water and Music. I know there are a lot of other Web3 artists that are going through that process as well. So expanding. Sherry, I could literally talk to you for hours. I don't even know how to take this, but I really want this episode to also be like a tangible representation for artists about how they can get involved. And being so intimately involved in this space, you know, for people who are listening to the podcast right now and feeling very inspired, but maybe super overwhelmed, where do they start, you know, and what pieces of advice do you have to offer them?
Yeah, I guess starting with like a general observation that I've seen around like music and Web3 and how it is like distinctly different from other aspects of the music industry is that like the artists who are active in the ecosystem are super open and like willing to help and just like very accessible generally. Like they are the kinds of people who will like keep their DMs open and are building communities around that level of like accessibility. So I guess first thing I would say is like, don't be intimidated to, or encourage people not to feel intimidated to like tune into all these like Twitter spaces that are happening. Most of them that are like led by artists will eventually like open the stage and they're open to answering any questions. I think the in Water Music and like very much inspired by what we're seeing in like the Web3 ecosystem, that like we have like a no dumb questions like channel. And I think it's very much like the ethos of, at least like the, yeah, like best parts of music and Web3, like people who are leading these spaces, it's like anything is fair game, like any and all levels are welcome. So at least that's been my experience. I would encourage people to like just actively like lurk whenever possible in these spaces and like not feel afraid to speak up, because so much of those like free resources, at least through those like live discussions, are happening. I would, yeah, I think shout out to Latasha, who's also an artist in particular. She leads weekly, I think they're weekly or at least like very regular, like onboarding, like Web3 101 calls with the work she's doing at Zora. Those are, I know, have been super effective for a ton of artists. And I, to the point where I know a lot of artists who have like been through that experience are now like onboarding and teaching each other. So it's just like a very healthy peer-to-peer ecosystem. Yeah. And not this might be self-promotional, but at Water Music, we also have released two very in-depth reports on music and Web3. They are admittedly very long, but the goal is to make them like more accessible. So I guess it depends on what you're interested in on the Web3 side, but all the reports are 100% free. If you're interested in like what different tools are available to artists to either like mint and sell NFTs or launch social tokens, we have a piece on like music Web3 tools for artists on our website. We also have very in-depth study of like artist and platform onboarding strategies, a lot of like case studies of all independent artists and like kind of how they have interacted with their fan communities as they moved into Web3. So I definitely encourage you to like read those resources. Again, they're all 100% free. And and I think just the general nature of DAOs and of Web3 culture in general is that it is very like very participatory. And so like just like active lurking and like not being afraid to speak up, I think is important, because there will be people there who will like encourage you and kind of like usher you in and hopefully like a smoother, more accessible way.
Yeah. Well, if you weren't, I was gonna shout out Water and Music, because again, in prepping for this episode, I was stalking your Twitter, stalking Water and Music, and there were so many people that were posting that if they had access to their this type of information when they were first starting out their music journey, you know, maybe they wouldn't have stopped it. And I think that, like we've been talking about, a lot of the way the traditional music industry has been built is built around a black box of information. So you guys like building in public and openly sharing these resources is hugely valuable. So major props to you, Sherry, and your entire team. I'm honestly like in awe and really excited about the work that you guys are doing. Where can people find you if they want to get involved in Water and Music? What's the best place to go? Got to give you some shout outs here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. So for me specifically, I'm on Twitter at SherryHu42. That's my handle. It's full name, the number's 42. I guess to learn more about Water and Music, watermusic.com is our website. Stream.watermusic.com is the main landing page for all of our reports. And so there have been two released so far, both focus on music and Web3. And as of recording this, we are just launching season 2, which will be focused more on music and the metaverse and all the different technologies that fall under that. It'll be probably another emergent, chaotic process that very excited about. So on the Water Music website, if you're interested in becoming a member, which will give you access to like a lot of exclusive, like more exclusive content, and also to our Discord server, which is only for members, watermusic.com/membership is the place to go to learn more about that and where you can sign up. And yeah, as we talked about previously, you can sign up using a credit card, that's what you prefer, or we also have membership NFTs that you can buy as well.
Love that you're making that accessible. And I can't even imagine the hive mind that is a part of your community. So definitely check Sherry out. Definitely check Water and Music out. Sherry, thanks again for taking the time to, you know, kind of walk us through the music industry in general and why this is important and could be so impactful. Very excited for the future that we're building towards and to have people like you spearheading this movement. So thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thanks so much.